Program was The Gary Noel Show, heard Monday through Friday at noon. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind, coming up at the 1 p.m. hour, followed by On Air with the Blacks, featuring the illustrious Blacks at 2 p.m. Once again, a big thank you to those listeners who have stepped up and gave so generously financially during our most recent drive during the summer of 2017. You are the reason why we call this listener-sponsored media, and we thank you for that. We want to continue on providing you information that you expect from us here on a regular basis, but we could only do that with your help, and we thank you for that. Make sure that whatever pledge that you have generously done during our most recent drive is fulfilled, as we will do our best to make sure that whatever premium that you requested during this drive will be fulfilled as soon as possible. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind, coming up.
Hi everybody, Ben Starr and Kevin O'Donohue with you here with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And yes, just echoing what Reggie said, thank you to those of you who contributed during our summer fun drive. You are indeed the reason that this is listener-supported radio, and you are the reason that WBAI is able to continue bringing you the programming that you've come to know and love. And today, well, We spoke a lot, Kevin, about the show that we did yesterday, about the discussion that we had on shyness.
Yeah.
And it seemed to touch a nerve, right?
Yeah.
Because after every show we do, we get feedback, whether it's email feedback, whether it's those of you who call us here directly at the center. We're used to getting your feedback. But yesterday...
Off the charts.
Off the charts. I mean, we received more emails, the most emails I'd say we'd received after any show in over a year.
Oh, for sure.
So there's something about the concept of shyness and social anxiety and the discussion that we had that really touched a nerve. And I think many of you are sensitive to this because it is such a widespread phenomenon. And like we said yesterday, up to half of all people in this country deal with some form of shyness or social anxiety. So if you're not dealing with it directly, then you certainly know someone close to you who is, whether that's a friend, family.
And if you have children, you have at least one. If you have more than two children, maybe one of them is shy.
Right.
Good chance that one's shy.
So a little bit later on in the show, we are going to read a couple of your emails. We won't be able to get to all of them, but, you know, here we are. It's August, and August is a season to be social,
August,
right?
Yes, Kevin? It is a time where you meet strangers. You can meet strangers. You can get invited to parties and see people. At these parties that you know the host of the party, but here you are in situations where you're meeting strangers.
Right. It's a big time for weddings.
Weddings,
well. Yeah.
You know, reunions,
sure.
All types of events. People are out there, you know, socializing and free at ease. It's the end of August. So these last 2 weeks, I mean, in Europe, I think it's the whole month of August that people are on vacation.
They just check out over
but,
there.
Yeah. But, here, Americans are very social in general. So we're not necessarily a shy culture.
And we went into that
and
yesterday.
And we went into that yesterday. One thing we didn't do, what is the least shy culture in the world, do you know?
I don't.
Israel.
Is that so?
Israel is the least shy country in the world.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. Let me see. I mean, there is an ethic of survival there. You know, they are an island amidst a crowd. So they have certain strengths that they develop, and they you know, they're known for their communality. So I think that that's a couple of the reasons, but I think we should research that. Again, it was something we mentioned yesterday about shyness being part of an ethnic or cultural heritage. But I thought we'd start, you know, just laying out there. And remember, we said Japan and Asia is a place where shyness is very, very prevalent.
Sure. So here we are. We're talking about shyness and social anxiety and how to overcome that, strategies to take to try to alleviate that, to try to break free of it. Because shyness can be acquired, right?
Sure.
We learned yesterday that really only a small fraction of people who are considered shy or socially anxious, only maybe 1 in 5 or 1 in 6 might be...
congenitally.
Right. And, you know, and for the most part, shyness is something that's acquired through an experience, whether it's a trauma, a separation, a difficult experience. And so if it's something that can be learned, then it can certainly be unlearned. Would you say that's right, Kevin?
I think it can be unlearned. It's more difficult depending on your upbringing. I mean, after the show, we talked about a thing called the attachment theory yesterday, you and I, and I thought we'd talk about a little bit of that today. For people whose attachment to their mother or their caretaker could be fathers these days, but whoever's there for the child every day is central to that child. And if you're an absent caretaker or you're an inconsistent caretaker, your shyness is going to be harder to get over. So, yes, there are tools as adults that we can practice and places we can practice. But if you were raised, let's say, with a parent that was stressed, if you come from a large family, there's a good chance that your parent was very, very stressed. If there is diabetes or if you suffers from a physical ailment, your mother or your father, whoever is taking care of the child the most, if, you know, something is distracting the parent, if they're unresponsive, if they can't respond all the time, so there's an inconsistency there, then the child is going to be frightened and his calls and his needs for attention are not going to be answered and they're not going to trust the world. So we talked about attachment theory, you and I, but I'd like to put it out there for people today. Basically, there are 4 types of attachment. And the most adaptive one is the secure attachment. A child is being responded to by its mother. A child is relaxed when the mother leaves the room. A child smiles when the mother returns. A child is adaptable to strangers.
So a secure attachment is a child who has a safe, healthy, and comfortable relationship to the primary caretaker.
It's almost like they're connected. Even when the mother leaves the room, the symbiosis is still there. There's a sense of being connected. But then you have, let's say, a disorganized attachment, where if you look at your mother, let's say a good mother is a very clean mirror. And so when the child looks in the face of the mirror, he sees a smiling, bubbly, bouncy face coming back at him, a responsive, cheerful, unstressed, attentive, aware, alert, present reflection. But, you know, if the mirror is broken into 100 pieces, a.k.a. the caretaker is distracted, unresponsive, just depressed or just under stress all the time.
Unable to be fully present.
Then you have a fully fragmented mirror, and that's going to show up in the child. And they're going to have a very delicate relationship with the world. And so growing up later on, they're going to tend to be shy.
So what you're talking about here, Kevin, and if you're just joining us, we're talking about attachment theory and attachment styles as a predictor of shyness and social anxiety. And this comes from a study that was done called The Strange Situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was done by Mary Main, M-A-I-N. And it basically says, here are the conditions of the experiment. The mother leaves the room. Here we go. I want everybody to get this clearly because it's a really classic experiment, and people should know how it was formed. It was the parent and the infant are introduced to a separate room. The parent and infant are alone. The parent does not participate while the infant explores. Then a stranger enters the room, starts talking to the parent, and then approaches the infant. The parent leaves the room. This is the first separation. Then the stranger's behavior is focused on the child. How does the child react? How is the child responding to this adult? Is the child recoiled in fear? Is the child comfortable, accepting, trusting in this new figure in the room?
Now, I'm assuming that the stranger has spoken to the parent in front of the child to sort of establish that the parent's okay with the stranger.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So the child is witnessing mommy's okay with this stranger. I should be okay. So that in itself will tell you, I'm secure with mommy. If mommy's secure with this person, then I can be secure with this person. So then mom comes back, comforts the infant, and then leaves again. Now, this experiment was done on 400 infants between 12 months and 24 months, so between the first and second year. So the mom comes in and then leaves again, and then leaves the child alone. There's no stranger there. So the child is there, and the camera's watching, and what they notice is whether the child is free to move around, is free to explore. How far out of a circle, let's say, will the child go? How free in their movements will they be? Well, it turns out if the attachment is not secure, if you're not connected to your mother, you're going to limit your movements. You're going to stay within a very circumscribed area. But those who have the most secure attachment are going to go out of the circle, go into all sorts of corners of the room. Their mind is going to expand. They're going to, natural curiosity is going to kick in. And they're going to feel free.
And so these original attachment styles, they're going to have, there's going to be an echo. There's going to be a ripple effect throughout life, through childhood, through adolescence, through early adulthood, and beyond.
Yeah, there sure is. And I mean, we as therapists, we can look at people right away, almost within our first session, and we say, how secure was their attachment? Of course, anybody who comes, you know, to talk to a counselor is blameless. It's not their, often it's not their fault. I mean, there are conditions that they can change themselves, and shyness could be one of them. Addiction could be another. There's a certain responsibility that adults have to take. But when we see a wounded attachment, we can see it in clients and people that come through, we recognize that, yes, this did not start with this child, this person, this adult now in front of me. This started probably before her parents and you know, his parents and grandparents and great-grandparents.
Sure. It makes me think of the discussion we had last year on epigenetics and how, you know, trauma and difficulties can be passed on generationally through genetically, really.
Right. And that's a perfect metaphor for what children do, is they absorb, this absorption. So if you're grandmother suffered a trauma that your mother didn't exhibit, you could be inheriting that trauma. And that's what epigenetics and Mark Willen was talking about. So let me finish with the experiment. Then after the second separation, the infant's alone, and then the stranger comes in and again focuses attention on the infant. And now the mother enters again, greets the infant, and picks up the infant, and the stranger leaves conspicuously. But that's not the end of the experiment. The end of the experiment is, how is the child now treating the mother who left this child alone with a stranger twice? Is the child angry? A 12-month-old. You know, you don't think that 12-month-old can manipulate adults, you know? You think that, oh, that's something you learn in adolescence. You start to learn about the world and you start. No, infants know how to get affection and attention and know what to do, you know, how to get mommy to come back. So there's a manipulation going on. So this infant is in a position to manipulate mom, either by reciprocating, by giving affection or attention back to mother or father, whoever the caretaker is, or not. So again, it's a secure attachment. There's something called an anxious, ambivalent attachment, where the child will show some emotion, but then will show some passivity to the mother just to get back at the mother. And then there's an anxious avoidant, where the child will not give any attention to the mother. They're so angry and resentful. And again, this is 12 months, 13 months. Early on in development, the child is feeling these emotions. And then the disorganized attachment, so where there is absolutely no affect, no response, could care less if the mom leaves the room or comes back or not.
So the question, I guess, is for our listeners out there with very young children, is how can they establish that secure attachment with their children? How can they make sure that they are providing a safe and comfortable attachment to the child to avoid the anxious styles of attachment that lead to social anxiety later on, that lead to shyness?
Yeah. Well, what do you think? I mean, eye contact. That's one of the things we talked about yesterday, and we're going to talk again about how to help yourself get over your shyness or your social anxiety. Eye contact. Eye contact with everybody you meet. Well, if your mother is practicing eye contact with you every time she sees you, and I see this, you know, I see mothers out there doing it much more nowadays than in the old days, making eye contact with their two-year-old, their one-year-old, their three- and four- and five-year-old. Sometimes it's the most beautiful thing in the world to see a mother making eye contact with a three-year-old and a four-year-old and watching that child come to the mother. Total ease, total comfort, two people looking at each other in the eye, and, you know, what can happen only is smiles, you know. So, but that's one thing. I mean, I think responsive, you know, in the research that we looked at, responsiveness, how responsive is the mother, the caretaker? I keep saying mother because she's the traditional one there, but a lot of fathers are home now. And, you know, being responsive in the early development of your children is a huge determinant of their success in life.
So repeated eye contact, touch, would you say?
Touch for sure. Eliciting conversation, eliciting words. And for the infant, it would be eliciting sounds, you know, all a variety. The bigger the variety, the better. You don't just want goo goo gaga. You know, you want a whole range of affect and a whole range of emotions, a whole range of words. But for four-year-olds and five-year-olds and six-year-olds, it's encouraging language, encouraging a dialogue. So this will bring the child out of any sense of damage that an insecure attachment could create and help them get over any sense of shyness. Go ahead.
If you're listening to, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM WBAI. I'm Ben Starr here with Kevin O'Donohue, broadcasting live from the Positive Mind Center here in Manhattan. And we started this discussion yesterday regarding shyness. We discussed how only actually 15 to 20% of people are born inherently shy.
Yeah.
So for the vast majority of people that are dealing with social anxiety, right, five out of six people with social anxiety acquired it at some point. And we know that there are many ways to have acquired it. One of them, like we're talking about today, might be a certain parenting style that leads to an anxious or insecure attachment. Another one might be maybe a trauma or an event that mm-hmm. had happened, as some sort of separation.
Yeah. Well, they, just to chime in on that, they found that if your mother died, your mother's mother, the nurturing mother, their mother died before you graduated high school, there was a 58% chance that your child would grow up phobic or anxious, grow up anxious, 58%. So a loss, Ben, before the end of high school of the mother or the essential caretaker is a very big determinant on the adjustment and the attachment of the child.
And we discussed yesterday the potential pitfalls and the costs of going through life with a social anxiety, with a shy personality. I mean, starting from childhood and going all the way up to adulthood, right? A shy child is probably more likely to undergo, you know, to endure teasing and rejection from their peers.
Mm-hmm.
A shy child may slip through the cracks at school, may not get the attention they need academically. And the shyness that, you know, translates into adolescence, it means continued social alienation and a much greater potential for drug and alcohol abuse.
Mm, yeah.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about that later because that's we received an email on just that topic.
And, of course, interestingly, girls, young girls, are much more shy than boys, as we know. You know, boys will go out and, you know, play with trucks and play with each other and roughhouse and be social. And girls can tend to be, yes, they're communal, but they can be shy. Girls tend to feel shyness between the ages of 7 and 12. But boys, boy, does it kick in adolescence that boys start to really feel a sense of shyness. So we could ask people out there. I know I confronted my shyness when I entered high school. And they're, you know, they talk about transitions. So any major transition, let's say kindergarten or, you know, middle school or high school, or if you're divorced, even adults, like, we're susceptible to shyness in certain times if we suffer a big loss. If you lose your job and suddenly you're out there socially, you know, and your esteem was resting on your career, you're going to be shy.
Which is another issue that
we
need to discuss another time. But yeah. Certainly when, yeah, you know, when the identity is linked to what do you do?
Yeah.
then that's fraught with a lot of potential problems,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. But basically, yeah, it is. But basically, the point is, whenever the person is facing a challenge, so in adolescence, you're facing the dawn of your sexuality, and what is this big, huge mystery entering into my life, sexuality? How do I adjust to it? And a lot of people, a lot of adolescents are crippled by it. You know, they become very timid, very shy, blame themselves, you know. So we talked yesterday about pivotal times when to talk to your children, you know, when to notice a sort of withdrawal, when to notice a shyness, because ultimately shyness becomes a habit. You know, when it becomes a social anxiety and social phobia, then it becomes a pathology.
It becomes ingrained.
It becomes ingrained. You can talk a child out of it if they realize that the world is still safe. Even while I'm dealing with this challenge, there are places where it's safe. They can, you know, transition more smoothly. So divorce is a big one. Divorce is big for adults, and it is for children too. So, again, it's something to look out for when we have these transitions. So, read, you know, you'd mentioned that we got some callers, some emails yesterday. Do you want to read one of those?
Sure, yeah.
Because we're going to take calls again in the second half of the show. And, you know, I'm sure this is whetting people's appetite, but we thought a couple of emails. Well, this one particular email really struck a chord.
Well, we're used to getting feedback after every show. So, you know, we give you our email address, positivemind@wbai.org. We love to hear from you out there. And we're used to getting your emails after every show. But yesterday we received, like we mentioned earlier, we see more feedback on yesterday's show than we've gotten in over a year, certainly in this calendar year.
Yeah.
We have not had a show that had as much interest or response than yesterday's show.
90% of people can identify with it.
Right. It's such a universal topic.
Yeah.
And we did want to share just a couple of those emails. I mean, we're not going to have time to get to them all. But I did want to share a couple of them, and we're not going to share the names. We'll just give you an initial. So this one comes from G. And G said, "I really enjoyed your show regarding shyness. I used to be very comfortable talking in public, at parties, and conversing with strangers, but only with the consumption of alcohol. And because of an alcohol addiction, I'm now in recovery and no longer drink. How can I get past my shyness without using alcohol as a crutch?"
Mm.
That's from G. That's G.
Yeah.
Say G.
Well, we thank him for that, and we congratulate him or her, we're not sure who, on their recovery. And, you know, having the courage, the boldness to give up really a crutch, which you're recognizing was a crutch in social situations, is a huge, huge step and a huge achievement, accomplishment. So I applaud you on that. It's not easy, it's true, to have used a social lubricant your whole life, like alcohol, to get yourself through the awkwardness of social situations. It's harder later, you know, it's difficult to now practice things that, you know, might seem tedious, but you've taken the first step in the first place, you've stopped, and now you want to start connecting with people. You say you're in recovery. I mean, I think recovery is one of the gifts in the world for shy people. First of all, probably 90%, or you could even poll people at a recovery meeting. Were you ever shy, or are you shy? I would bet that almost everybody at a recovery meeting is shy and has been shy, and that's what drove them to the addiction in the first place. I mean, let's face it. You can't – addiction's all about not negotiating love. You can't negotiate the love that you need. The touch, the warmth, the affection, the attention, the camaraderie, the relationships that you need. So you use an external substance to help you get there. That's the foundation of addiction. Now, G has taken the step to stop it, but he gets to go to a recovery meeting where he gets to stand up and say, "Hi, I am such and such, and I am a this kind of addict. And by the way, I am shy, so this is really hard for me to stand up here and talk." And everybody in the room gets to nod and say, "Yes, we've been there. We know that." So that's the first gift. But we talked yesterday about chit-chat.
Yeah.
And making small talk. Have you ever been on a park bench and somebody come up to you and just start talking?
Oh, sure.
That's chit-chat. You know, that's as simple as that. Do you admire or envy those people?
I think I'm one of those people that strikes
are.
Up the small talk. But
you are very good at this.
What I think about alcohol, Kevin, is like any other addiction, it's a question of dopamine, right? When we consume a certain amount of alcohol, our brain is releasing dopamine, which is the pleasure chemical. We've talked about brain chemicals in the past. Mm-hmm. So dopamine is the chemical that makes us feel good in our brain. And the whole purpose, right, biologically and scientifically and evolutionarily, is for the dopamine chemical to act as an incentive to make us do things that's good for our bodies.
It's the chaser chemical. It helps animals in the wild chase other animals to eat.
Right.
You know, so
I think the problem that happens with drinking is that when you're drinking heavily, there's so much dopamine released that our brain has trouble making the distinction. They can't tell the brain no longer has the ability to really distinguish between a good decision, a healthy decision, and a bad decision or an unhealthy decision.
That's the downside.
Right.
That's the downside of drinking.
Right. So dopamine, and I think for many people who are withdrawing or in recovery from a certain addiction, beyond the chemical withdrawal, beyond the withdrawal to the actual narcotic or alcohol or substance or nicotine, whatever it might be, there's also a dopamine withdrawal that's incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
And I think part of recovery is also learning where to find healthy dopamine from, how to get those positive, healthy dopamine rushes. Mm. And there's a lot of places, Kevin. I mean, if you've ever heard the term runner's high.
Yeah, oh, sure.
The runner's high is a positive dopamine
rush. So replace – actually, that's a great psychological concept, to replace a bad habit with a positive addiction. There's such a book called Positive Addiction out there, by the way. But, yes, to replace a bad dopamine rush with a good dopamine rush.
Absolutely. So that could be working out. That could be eating healthy. I mean, anyone who's ever been on a low-carb diet knows – that the first few days of low carb or no carb can be excruciating, because what's happening is we're actually going through withdrawal from the carbohydrates, from the sugars in our system. Mm. And after that happens, there's an amazing feeling that comes from eating the right foods.
Ben, we're hitting a nerve again. People are calling already. We're going to take calls shortly, so we want to just say we will take your calls and we appreciate you calling. But give us a few more minutes, and after the break, we'll take the calls.
So what I'm saying is, after you've gone through the withdrawal of carbohydrates, of sugar, there is an amazing rush to be had from eating a bowl of spinach.
Really?
Believe it or not, yeah. There's an amazing rush to be had from, you know, eating a big salad with, you know, no carbs in it. But to the idea of, you know, alcohol as a crutch and a social lubricant, is that it's a dopamine producer.
Right.
And the reason it's so dangerous and substances in general is that they produce so much dopamine that they knock they knock us off kilter, and we have to relearn how to get dopamines in a positive and healthy way.
I love it.
Whether that's building a skill,
Whether
that is, you know, healthy behaviors like working out, eating right, there has to be a way to replace the unhealthy dopamine rush with one that's constructive
and
productive.
I think you're absolutely right. So addiction is founded in the, you know, it's a chemical byproduct of manipulating your brain chemistry. So you have to also have compassion for yourself. But I want to try and help G a little bit more with this idea that chit-chat, Ben. If somebody chit-chats with you on the park bench, I think you get a rush of dopamine like there. When somebody stimulates you like that, just out of nowhere. I mean, it's almost like a surprise situation. Somebody's actually, a stranger's talking to me. I know I have a physical reaction when somebody I don't know just starts to talk to me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I think that's probably a dopamine release right there. So chit-chat, and we did say other things yesterday, like changing your body posture, smiling, making eye contact, saying this mantra. Do you want to read the second letter? I mean, we only have a minute. I think we should do it when we come back.
Well, let's hear this email, the one last email we'll read from yesterday's show. And again, if you want to reach out to us via email, you can always reach us positivemind@wbai.org. And we don't always read emails on the air, but we do try to get back to them. So,
and they can reach me directly, too, also.
Sure.
Kevin at the Positive Mind.
Or right here at the center. But so we have another email. This one is from A. And A said, "Dear Positive Mind, thank you for the wonderful show on shyness. I remember before going to my first day of third grade, I was very fearful. I thought of what to do, and I started singing from The King and I, Whistle a Happy Tune. And that made all the difference. 70 years later, there are still moments of shyness. I'm still quiet and serious and looking to shift this. And that's why I'm taking the acting class that was offered during the recent WBAI fund drive to come out of my shell. Thank you, A. We appreciate your feedback on that.
And that starts Friday, by the way, the acting class with Anna Maria Cianciulli. So thank you, A, and we look forward to meeting you here at the Positive Mind Center.
We are going to take a short musical break, and you can reach us here at 212-757-5555. We'll be back after this with your phone calls.
Whenever I feel afraid, I hold my head erect and whistle a happy tune so no one will suspect I'm afraid. While shivering in my shoes, I strike a careless pose and whistle a happy tune, and no one ever knows I'm afraid. The result of this deception is very strange to tell, for when I fool the people I fear, I fool myself as well. I whistle a happy tune, and every single time, the happiness in the tune convinces me that I'm not afraid. Make believe you're brave, and the trick will take you far. You may be as brave as you make believe you are. You may be as brave as you make believe you are.
That's The King and I, Whistle a Happy Tune. And that was from the email that A sent us. That was her mantra. That's how she got through her social anxiety going into the third grade. And she remembers that all these years later. Thanks for the email. And remember, you can always send us an email, positivemind@wbai.org. And we're happy to read your feedback, and we love to hear from you and hear, you know, your thoughts and concerns and suggestions and how you feel about the show.
And I wonder if people could write us today about attachment and what kind of attachment they felt they had. Did you have a secure attachment to your caretaker? Do you think? Do you think you kind of received the mirroring that we talk about, a clear mirror looking back at you when you were young? Or was it cloudy? Was it, you know, was it you know, not as clear, because that could be the anxious, avoidant kind of attachment. And then there's the ambivalent attachment, and then
disorganized.
Disorganized. Thank
you. Let's take a phone call. We have Lynn on the line. Hi, Lynn. Thanks for giving us a call.
Hi. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Lynn. How are you?
Okay. How are you guys doing today? You guys sound great.
Thank you.
I would have to say that I fall into the category of the fragmented, because both of my parents were completely off the wall. But it's not even a matter of having a clear picture. It's, fragments, you know. But so I've had to, Kevin and I have a relationship, professional, and he knows that I've had to overcome a lot.
And a lot of work you have done, my dear.
And we continue to work, my friend. We continue to
work. I love it. Yeah. What a strong spirit.
Thank you. A couple of things I want to give other people a chance. First of all, we're discussing anxiety alleviators, dopamine producers. GABA, Gary Noel has talked about it. GABA, G-A-B-A.
That's a healthy dopamine replacement, Lynn.
Supplement, also L-tyrosine. Both amazing. Help you adjust your mood. Just to make a note of that. Now,
fantastic.
I wanted to really quickly bring up, and as soon as I read your first email, heard your first email today, I was like, that person stole my idea. The whole addiction thing.
You've had a journey, yeah.
You know, growing up, I've always been I'm a writer, as you know, among other things, and I've always been a tremendous observer, even from the time I was a child, and I couldn't help but notice growing up that the other children in my class that I had known, you know, I grew up in the kind of a very small neighborhood in Glendale, Queens, that was a very homey neighborhood at the time. It's expanding now, but then it was like almost like a little farm town in in the early 1970s, late 1960s. Yep. So, and today's my birthday, by the way.
Hey, happy birthday. Yeah,
that's thank our, you. We won't say how old I am, but...
That's our outro, Ben. That's our outro.
When I saw, in other words, many of the people that I went to kindergarten with, I knew them in high school. We all followed each other to
And did you sense shyness? Yeah, did you sense shyness? When they were young?
What I will say is, and it's an absolute, in the children who were the most withdrawn and shy when we were little children together in elementary school, these turned out to be the biggest dope addicts going.
Yes, thank you for that, Lynn. You're absolutely right.
And this was my observation.
Right.
And I have to say to you, and not that I was a huge dope addict, but I did develop some problems with addiction later on.
Mm-hmm.
I was among them. I'm not pointing fingers.
Of course not. You're just making
It made social situations bearable.
Yes, of course.
And so it just became such a part of the norm that there was no doing without it.
Now, you know me, Lynn. I'm going to have to ask you, what would you say if you could go back there to these people that, you know, had to depend on these substances? Let's say you could use your voice and your emotions and your feelings and everything to help them make a better choice. What would you say?
First thing I would tell them is that their feelings, I don't know how much a little child would understand this, but their feelings of whatever inadequacy they have are not their fault. This was put on them by their elders, This was put on them by their elders, who no doubt had plenty of problems of their own and didn't really know any better than to pass it on.
Exactly.
And, encourage them to try to see how you do without it for a while. Power through.
That's it.
See how you do. And if it's absolutely unbearable, you gotta get some kind of help.
Now, knowing you as I know you, I would say there's one last idea, and that would be, come on, hang out with me.
Yeah, and let's share about a wine. No, just kidding.
All right.
But,
Lenny, we're going to take the next call, but thank you for calling.
All right. Thank you,
Lynn.
Peace out.
All right.
Well, she's
happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
The number to call, 212-757-5555.
Yeah,
we're talking about social anxiety today and shyness. It's a continuation of yesterday's discussion, and we want to hear from you if you connected with this topic yesterday or today. What kind of attachment did you have growing up?
Yeah.
Did that inform your social situations for the rest of your life? 212-757-5555.
Yeah, and it's often the fragmented people, the people who have like the other attachments, we call it insecure attachments, that hang out with each other. And one of the benefits of noticing, of having a secure attachment of your own is being able to help other people and being able to invite other people to hang out with you. And that's what I meant about Lynn. I mean, Lynn is such a strong, strong woman, a survivor, and often trauma. And I mean, Lynn has suffered a kind of trauma, which we've talked about, can create a real strong spirit.
We have another caller on the line, Kevin. Let's hear from Stefano. How are you?
Doing well. How are you today?
Hey, Stefano.
Thanks for calling in.
A pleasure. Kevin, Ben, I really appreciate the work that you do.
Thank you.
How is this touching you today?
Well, it struck a chord because a few years ago, I attended a workshop with a therapy group, actually over at the DeMille Center.
Oh.
And when I got the call from Armand, I showed up and I attended, and I was also, I guess, under the category of socially anxious at that time.
Okay.
We went around the room, and he paired us in groups, and he asked that we look each other in the eye and say that I see the divine in you.
Wow. Namaste. Namaste.
Yeah, and I could barely get the words out, let alone keep my eyes in contact with my partner or the person I was paired with.
Yeah.
The reason I say it struck a chord is because listening to this show, I understand clearly, or I have a better clarity of understanding as to why that was important in the rehabilitation.
Oh, yeah.
And why do you think that is?
It's a reconnection of sorts. I think it allows, without shame, fear, guilt, and other normal anxieties, to be put on the side.
Yeah.
To maybe trust for a minute. And it took a long time to... I thought about that, you know, after that workshop. Hmm. And I wondered why I was invited. And I understand now in a different light. Hmm. And, Ben, I don't know if you remember, but I was sitting next to you.
I do. I remember very well. I remember that whole workshop. It was pretty special.
How are you doing with social anxiety now?
Better and better every day. I think, coping mechanisms and making trustful connections with people.
Yeah.
It sort of establishes a foundation where in a social element, atmosphere, there could be anxiety, but since there's no major attachment or repercussion, I think it allows things to flow a little bit more safely or without intense emotions.
Yeah, that's what chit-chat is, you know? And I think we're going to do a workshop here on chit-chat, believe it or not, and we want you to come. What do you think? You know, because chit-chat is conversation without the emotion. So I think that would be a great thing for you to practice, Steph.
I'm in. You let me know the dates. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. So look, send me an email at Kevin at the Positive Mind, and I'll establish a thread with you. Look,
okay.
And now before you go, one last thing. I hear the divine in you. Have a good day.
Likewise. Take care.
Thank you.
You know what that is? Namaste.
212-757-5555. Number to call. Namaste. Yeah, it's a Buddhist mantra. Right?
That's right. Well, it's a way of saying hello to somebody. It's like taking the moment, taking the time to stop and look in somebody's eyes and say, I recognize the divine in you. Namaste.
Well, I always recognize the divine in you, Kevin, and it's been a pleasure working with you,
Thank you, Ben.
Over the years, and just seeing how much we've both learned and grown together. 212-757-5555 is the number to call. What do you think? Does this attachment difficulty in childhood that we talked about, do you think it leads to problems in adult relationships? I think it does.
I think it echoes.
Yeah. I think it ripples out forever.
Hmm.
Unless there's some sort of emotional intervention that happens. What kind of difficulties do you see, at least in people that you work with, that might stem from an attachment difficulty early on?
Well, I think it comes down to, in relationships, adults, we kind of avoid the hard stuff. You know, being close, especially if you weren't close with your original caretakers, is really an unsettling feeling. You know, people like to go to... tasks that they can accomplish. But intimacy is such a difficult and sketchy thing for even securely attached people that avoidance of intimacy becomes a habit. That becomes the coping mechanism. So certain topics are safe. Certain topics are okay that, we can talk back, but don't ask me about my feelings. Or don't ask me to come with you to certain places where I'm going to have to feel something. I think often it is rooted in an attachment feeling, an insecure attachment. But even secure people can have a hard time expressing feelings. People who have secure attachments. So intimacy leads to all types of adaptations. And one is an avoidance style. You know, you just say, don't get too close to me. You have rigid boundaries. You say, don't transgress my boundary. I can't go any further with that. So that's one way I think this attachment style carries over into adulthood.
Let's take another call. Jonathan's on the line. Thanks for calling in.
Yes, my friend. How are you?
Hey, Jonathan.
Hey, buddy. This is Jonathan from the Bronx.
Hey, nice to have you call.
Absolutely. I love your show. And I just want to thank both of you for being vessels upon which Armand's spirit continues to flourish.
Oh, we love it. How are you? You sound like an outgoing guy, Jonathan.
Oh, very, very much so. And I was just sharing that in regards to your discussion about shyness, when you consider how diverse our population is today, I think it is of the utmost importance to take into consideration that there are social behaviors with different people.
Yeah.
Stemming from their culture and their heritage that may oftentimes mimic shyness.
Oh. You picked
and
up
that,
on, yeah.
You know,
go
I'm sorry?
I said we mentioned that earlier, but you're echoing what we're saying, you know, that there are certain cultures, certain ethnic backgrounds that, you know, you mimic what you learn in childhood, and certain ethnic backgrounds really encourage a kind of withdrawal, a kind of shyness.
Absolutely. And so when you take a look at the type of climate that we're living in today, as of, for instance, what's happening in the South and our president's response to the activity, it really wages war against anyone coming from a position of shyness in order to reach out and feel a sense of, forget just physical, but psycho-emotional safety.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But you're making a really good point. Actually, these demonstrations are opportunities for shy people to voice, to feel collective, feel connected to other people. So if you had an insecure attachment, you know, a public demonstration where you feel something strongly is a chance to really bond with other people. And these little types of exercises can help you get over a sense of shyness. Boy, are we encouraged to be in a shy place these days.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Absolutely.
Jonathan, look, we're going to take another call. Thank you for calling. Keep calling. And one thing, send me an email, kevin@thepositivemind. Because I want to get your feedback on this idea of doing a study with ethnicity and asking people from certain ethnicities to call in. Okay?
I will not only send an email, but I would love to be a part of it. Many thanks.
Oh, love to be in touch with you.
Good to hear from you.
Yeah. You know, we often don't realize what kind of luck we have being in such a diverse culture. I mean, if you get on the subway, chances are you're going to see 20 different ethnic background.
Jonathan makes a great point because we do live in a culture where shyness is not rewarded, right? And so people coming from a position where, you know, there are some cultures where eye contact isn't even appropriate or respectful. And and in the culture we live in here, shyness is almost a fault, right? And, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
Like
the most outspoken, for better or for worse, the most outspoken, loud, and aggressive types often are successful compared to a shyer, more withdrawn type.
Absolutely. To be in power and be shy is almost an oxymoron. It's a really big contradiction. And you're right. I think our culture encourages and rewards outgoingness and extroversion. And being introspective and introverted and shy is kind of not rewarded. It's kind of criticized. What's wrong with you? So we do have a culture where, you know, bullying can be an acceptable style of interaction. And I think shy people are on the receiving end of that often.
I think we have time for maybe two or three more quick calls. We have Barry on the line. Hi, Barry.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Barry. How
are
you doing?
I have a question. I kind of tuned in late, but it perked my curiosity because of my background and childhood. I'm an older guy. I'm in my 60s. But I've always had a depressive kind of personality, and I've always related back. Everything relates back to childhood. I mean, that's psychology 101.
Yeah, sure. but some people deny it, but you're right.
But my growing up, my parents were loving to the extent that they didn't ignore me, but there was high dysfunctionality too, because there was, and they were not close as parents. You know, my mother, my question is really, can somebody, analyzing my own childhood, I think I was overly attended to, and I've read that that can create a dependence and kind of have a paradoxical effect where the mother is there, and when she leaves, it's abandonment issues. And I wanted your intake on input on that because of a depression that, throughout my whole life, I'm depressed.
Yeah. So let me get this straight. So your mom was present all the time. She was very protective.
Yeah, you know what? I kind of deduced that because of, throughout my years, I had five siblings. And I kind of deduced that. They were spread out all over age-wise. So,
what number are you?
Two.
You're the second. Okay. Of course. So you felt attended to up to a certain age, and then all of a sudden.
The reason why, another thing is important. Throughout my childhood, I never liked to be alone. I mean, my parents would send me to camp. And I would want to go in the winter, like when they were talking about it. But then when I finally went, I was so homesick and felt abandoned.
Oh, yeah.
And that abandonment, stayed with me throughout my life.
Yeah. No. Are you a half glass empty kind of guy?
I don't know. I've had some weird, bad things happen to me in my life, like everyone else. I lost my only brother in the Trade Center, so I'm dealing with that, too.
Yeah. Because, we have something called the Enneagram where a mother, a child is treated specially or treated like, they're unique. And then all of a sudden, they need to attend to other children and they feel this sense of abandonment. What happened to my being special? And often this manifests as an adult in a kind of depressive style where you kind of adopt what we call the Enneagram, the romantic kind of melancholic personality, but it's certainly a common thing. Are you shocked?
Treat that like a soul would treat trauma, or how would you go about really treating that at this point?
I would say if you think it was a trauma, let's start there. What was traumatic about it? When did you have your first sense of abandonment? Did your parents suffer any losses themselves? I mean.
Yeah.
Did they, we talked about epigenetics.
I think my mother was very much kind of abandoned in her sense that her children were her surrogate husbands kind of thing because the husband really wasn't sociable.
Jonathan, I have to say what I would do is I'd try and get you angry. I think you'd need to get some anger out. I think you're probably hanging out. You're muffling all sorts of anger inside you. I think that would release you a lot, and it might actually open you to compassion towards your parents, your siblings, and yourself. But I would think that'd be the way for you to go.
Yeah, what do you mean? Just all kind of therapy?
I would get you angry, but I'd also let you scream. So I have a soundproof room. So that's what I would do. A lot of therapists have therapists next door, and you can't yell. But here at the Positive Mind Center, I have a room where you can do that. So if you ever want to do that, we could start with where you are if you think that there was a trauma. But if you're dealing with long entrenched depression and you can't really enjoy things, I hear a really strong guy back there. You need to get in touch with some anger. So anytime you can call, you can email me at kevin@thepositivemind.com.
All right, Kevin. I appreciate your time.
You bet, Jonathan. Thank you.
Thank you for calling in. I think that was Barry, but that's okay.
Oh, Jonathan was the guy before. My bad. No problem. Barry. Anyway.
This has been a great discussion, Kevin. I'm glad we were able to have it, and thank you to everyone who called in today. Right now, this is something that we felt was important to talk about, and
it's worth 2 days, Ben. Shyness, anything that afflicts 90% of the population. That we ourselves can identify with, and it's not a pathology. Let's get that out. It's not a pathology. So it can morph into social anxiety and social phobia. And when you talked about addiction before, people use alcohol as a lubricant, as a way to make interaction with other people easy. You'd prefer not to. You'd I'm sure most of us would, you know, would say, I'd rather not have to rely on something.
Sure.
But, you know, it's the first thing, a lot of people, it's the first thing they do when they go to a wedding is go to the bar.
Yeah.
You know, in order to enable themselves. So it's not a pathology. So many people are struggling with it. But I think the point is that we, as even as adults, we're so vulnerable that human beings, we can just get imbalanced so easily. And can fall into an addiction, can fall into a phobia, can fall into social anxiety, taking something that was an awkwardness and then it becomes an avoidance.
Yeah.
And that's when it becomes problematic. And again, you need, you know, so people are the cure with shyness. You know, we practice chit-chat, we practice making small talk, you practice making eye contact, you practice everywhere you go. Because if you don't, we are vulnerable species, and we can take retreat. We can retreat into what's comfortable.
And for the majority of people who are dealing with these kinds of social phobias, social anxiety, shyness, remember, most people acquired it at some point. And if it's a learned behavior, we can work to unlearn that behavior as well. So it's not necessarily something that's hopeless. It's not something that we should give up on. It's something that we should try to work on, and there's many ways to do that. We love the fact that so many of you called us today. We are so pleased that, you know, the feedback we've gotten from you, and we're still looking forward to reading your emails, positivemind@wbai.org. And you can contact Kevin directly, kevin@thepositivemindcenter.com.
Not center.
But no, the positive mind. kevin@thepositivemind.com.
Or thepositivemindcenter.com.
That's right.
And one last question, Ben. What park bench are you going to be on so that, you know, people can come and just start talking?
Well,
to
I was in Washington Square Park last weekend. There was a great jazz band playing on the, I guess that's the west side of the park, right? Closer to 6th Avenue.
Uh-huh.
Great jazz band.
Did they
playing.
Play any music that you enjoyed?
They did.
See,
they
we're doing
played
chit-chat
a lot of,
here.
A lot of great standards. A lot of great standards. I stopped. There was a huge crowd. They sounded great.
Wow.
And they, you know, they really, that music touched me.
Yeah.
And
what kind of day was it out there?
It was cloudy. It was Saturday. It was overcast.
And the music sort of made everybody
It just pierced right through it. It was great.
A lot of smiling faces.
You've been listening to The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM. I'm Ben Starr here with Kevin O'Donohue. As always, we broadcast live from the Positive Mind Center on West 57th Street. We're here Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 1, only on 99.5 FM. And if you missed an episode, you can always find us online for free on the iTunes Store. It's a free podcast. You can download, subscribe, check it out. And as always, send us an email, positivemind@wbai.org. Till next time, we'll see you Tuesday.
Take care, everybody.